Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to this week's edition of MMA Talk for Pro Wrestling Fans. My name is Sean Ennison, the host chair this week with Rob Vallejos on assignment. And joining me this week is Rick Monsey. Rick, how's it going, man?
It's going good. It's good to be back on the show. I was in Alaska for a couple of weeks on vacation, and I tried to be a part of the show, but apparently when you're up in Alaska, it is nearly impossible to get anything done as far as podcasting goes. So good to be back home. Good to be with you, Sean, and looking forward to talking about an exciting card we had over the weekend and looking forward as well.
Yes, indeed. Welcome back. And do they have internet in Alaska? Just out of curiosity.
They do, but there's there's just not a lot of time to do those things. So that's the thing. I thought I was going to be able to get all this stuff done, and as soon as I got there, I even emailed Wade with best intentions to do a solo show of for the podcast myself before you did, and it fell apart completely due to scheduling and just the slow nature of Alaska and me in it.
That's how it goes. So as you said, we had an exciting card this past Saturday night with UFC 227. Let's run down from the top of the card, and I want to get your reactions and see where we're going next with these top fights, and then we'll run through quick takeaways for the rest of the card if you have any. So starting with the main event, we had TJ Dillashaw knocking out Cody Garbrandt for the second time in the first round. What was your thoughts on this fight?
Man, that fight was really, really good. I didn't know if it was going to surpass quality-wise as far as the first one, but I think this one, if you just look at the round by round, it's almost like round three, and this is just one big fight. And yeah, unfortunately, in the one big fight, Cody Garbrandt gets knocked out in each in two of the three rounds.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, these two, it seems like every time they fight, they're just going all out the whole time, and it's just, you know, nonstop excitement, which is always great. What do you think about the future going forward for Cody Garbrandt? What do you see him doing next?
Well, I was wondering if he even stays in this weight division, you know, and I think he does, and I think he racks up some wins. It's a stylistic match. I think he just beats everybody else, you know, and he did Dominic Cruz and everyone else who he faced against, he smoked. But it's just TJ Dillashaw, I think, has his number. And that you can say that too with Jose Aldo and Max Holloway. You know, they were saying during the Jose Aldo fight, he is still great, but yeah, it's just like it's a styles fight with him and Max Holloway. And that might be the same for Dillashaw. He might want to move from bantamweight, though. You know, he's not the biggest guy in the world anyways. I mean, he fits perfectly in bantamweight, but he's been knocked out convincingly now twice by the champion. So I don't know where he goes from here, but it needs to be somewhere where he can collect some more knockouts and the UFC can put their promotional tools behind him. Because, you know, Dana and everybody else around there wants him to be a success. I mean, oh, yeah, I want him to be a success. He's a cool-looking guy. He has a good gimmick, if you want to say that. But I don't see him being TJ or getting an opportunity to get another shot at him anytime soon.
Yeah, that's kind of the trick when you lose two exciting title fights in a row. You know, people will pay to watch you, but you're not going to be fighting the champ anytime soon for a third time. And, you know, the thing that's interesting to me about Garbrandt is that he seems to fight TJ differently than he fights other guys. You know, he comes in there winging punches. I mean, and you could say that he did that kind of earlier before the Dominic Cruz fight, but then he goes in there and fights Dominic Cruz and kind of out-cruises Cruz, and you would think that he would kind of take a similar attack against TJ, but never really happened in those two fights. He goes in there, you know, slinging big shots, and it didn't really work out for him.
Yeah, I heard Angela Hill say on the MMA Fighting Post show that he's very emotional when he fights TJ, yeah, and I think that's a good analysis by her. I think that he lets the emotions take the best of him, and I don't know, he doesn't work on the spacing or anything like that, and he was throwing in some kicks this time. That's what I liked about this fight as well as the last one, but it just didn't really equal very much, and I think that he needs to look forward to fighting a smart game plan, because he'll probably get paired up against someone like Rafael Assunção or something like that, and he can't fight that way against Assunção at all. So I think that he should have learned a lesson, and I don't know if he did in the fight against TJ, but hopefully he does, and he fights more, like you said, the way he fought Dominic Cruz. And, man, that was a good fight, though. I was happy that it went that way. I thought the betting odds were that this would go five rounds. It's kind of like the Rose Namajunas and Joanna fight, how the first one was just this like back and forth, and there was a quick knockout in the first round, and then the next fight they fought differently, more cautiously. Not this fight, not at all. It's almost, they're like, they, you know, if you watch the embeds, they show Cody rewatching the fight, and it's almost like he rewatched it and was like, okay, I'm going to do the exact same thing.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, every shot they were throwing was going for the kill, you know, and it ended up working out that way for him. Yeah, you know, and as far as Garbrandt goes, Sun Tzu was actually the first guy I thought of as well. Even though Sun Tzu's not coming off a loss, it kind of makes sense for their trajectories. You know, Sun Tzu, the only guy he's lost to since 2011 is T.J. Dillashaw. Garbrandt, the only guy he's lost to at all is T.J. Dillashaw. So that fight kind of makes sense. You know, neither of them is getting a title shot right now. Who do you think gets that next title shot?
You know, I was thinking, I'm kind of, I don't know, you know. I think this is one of those things where it's like everybody's like, oh, he can avenge his loss against Dominic Cruz now. But I think that's all dependent on Dominic Cruz's health. And so, but that's really, to me, the only logical next step for TJ. We're going to talk about it later, but I don't think it's Cejudo at all. I think that it's, yeah. I think it's Cruz, you know. And TJ might want to just sit out for a bit and just see how this develops with the Dominator, and because, you know, he needs to get that win back, because he's been good about that too. You know, we're talking about Sun Tzu. He beat Sun Tzu recently and got his win back, so I think that's what he'll want to do. And I think it'll be a big money fight too. I think that it's crazy to think that original fight was a FS1 main event. Yeah. I remember that being just like, wow, this is on free TV, and now definitely won't happen. You know, this will be hopefully on the top of a card. And you were, just to go back to real fast, you were saying that, you know, these guys are just swinging for the fences. It's funny, these guys didn't fight like how most people perceive bantamweights, even though I think bantamweights is kind of a special division, but these guys were slugging out like heavyweights, and you could feel the electricity in the audience. And that'll be a very different fight when he fights Dominic Cruz. I think that, you know, it'll kind of be more of like the same fight, but hopefully TJ doesn't get as flat-footed as he did in their first fight. I think he's learned and he's a better fighter now.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, it's funny that you mentioned that. You don't usually see it at bantamweight. You've got certain guys that kind of have that power. But and these two, you know, it's exciting when you get two guys at that weight who have that kind of that one-punch knockout power. You know, both of them can end a fight with one shot, or at least put it on the road to being over pretty quickly. You know, you got these two, you got John Lineker, and, you know, the list is pretty short as far as that goes.
What do you think of TJ what do you think of him still sporting the snake thing on his shirt? Did you see that?
I think it's a great troll job.
I do too. He like earned so many points with me because he did it their first fight.
Yeah.
You know, and then he's still doing it. I was like, you know, I really appreciate that. Do you think Marlon Moraes deserves a title shot or anything like that?
I was just going to bring up Marlon Moraes because he's been in there just wrecking people. You know, his only loss since he's been to the UFC was it a Sun Tzu? He lost the split decision to a Sun Tzu, right?
I think so, yeah.
His first fight in the UFC, and he's been in there wrecking people since then. I mean, the knockout against Aljamain Sterling was insane. You know, if Cruz doesn't get that first shot, I think the no-brainer fight is Moraes. I mean, that's a fight that, you know, you better make sure you see that one. That's a that's a can't-miss fight.
Yeah, and it's funny, too, because Marlon Moraes for a while hasn't, you know, most hardcore fans have known about him, but he's still, I don't think, quite the transitional star that Dominic Cruz to a certain extent is. But so I don't know marketing-wise, but I think it'll be exciting just to watch. And I keep, every time Marlon Moraes has got a knockout, I was like, it's just a fluke. The first time, he's not going to do it. Oh, he did it again.
He just continues to do it. And against legit competition now, you know, he was in there knocking people out in World Series of Fighting for a long time. But to come to the UFC and do it against guys like Aljamain Sterling and who was the guy he knocked out before Aljamain? I can't remember. But there was another one.
Rivera.
Yeah, Jimmy Rivera. You're right, it was.
Yeah.
And that's two legit guys at 135, and he toasted both of them. So,
yeah, and that kick against Rivera sounded like a baseball bat.
Yes.
I thought Jimmy Rivera was dead, but he got up right away. And you were right, his one loss was a Rafael Assunta. So
yeah.
I think, yeah, it's all starting to kind of make sense. This is the one division so far that even though it's kind of stacked and there's a lot of things going on, it makes sense. You know, you got the champion TJ Dillashaw beat the number one contender. Number one goes down to number three, Rafael Sanz out. And then number four, according to UFC rankings, Marlon Moraes, or number two, Dominic Cruz, will get the next shot. And, you know, everybody else is just, it all kind of makes sense. And so that's a good thing. You know, I heard you talking about how there are certain divisions like lightweight when on the Fox show that are just a kind of in disarray to a certain extent. And so it's like, at least we have one division that we can like pick apart and both agree on.
Yeah. And an actual active champion, which is nice, you know?
Yeah.
Speaking of champions, how you like that transition there?
That was really good.
we've got a new champion at flyweight with Henry Cejudo taking the split decision win over Demetrius Johnson. What were your thoughts on this fight? Did you score it for Cejudo, or did you just kind of wait and see what happened? Like, I'll tell you how I did it is I watched the fight, and as I'm watching it, I'm thinking, I have no idea who's winning this fight. It could get, you know, I figured it could go either way. I figured it would be a split decision. I had no idea who was going to get the nod. I just kind of threw my hands up and said, whoever gets it, I can't argue. What did you think?
Well, it's funny. I was scoring it round by round. I had a couple friends over, and I kind of saw it like the two judges did. But I was also just rooting for something interesting and for history to happen. You know, it's funny because I really enjoyed this fight. A lot of people are saying it's the best flyweight fight in the history of division. But when we ordered this pay-per-view, you know, the Thiago Santos fight was okay. The next fight, and then it's like when the co-main's about to start, you're like, I was at least thinking, I was like, this better be good or I'm going to be furious, you know, because like I barely almost didn't order this pay-per-view. Yeah. Now I'm so glad I did, obviously. But so as it started to pick up and Henry Cejudo arguably won the second round, I believe, you're like, oh, okay. Something's happening. And as it was going on and on, like I just, that fifth round, the drama in it was incredible. And so, yeah, I saw it 2-2, even though it's like I historically don't like to have takedowns mean as much as they do sometimes. You know, it's like I feel like when Johnny Hendricks beat Robbie Lawler in their first fight, he only won it because he got like this nothing takedown in the last 30 seconds of the fifth round. Right. And it always frustrated me. But this, at least Cejudo had ground control. He just needs to get some ground and pound in there. But that being said, it was good enough to win the championship. And I was scoring it, but it was kind of like when you watch boxing where you try not to, in five-round fights, score it round by round because it almost takes away from your enjoyment at times. You know, you're not there. So
yeah,
I agree with the judges' scorecard, though.
Yeah, I had no argument there either. But it was just such a fun fight. And I think this fight in particular strikes a real blow to the narrative that the titles don't mean anything. You know, if this was a fight for, you know, if this is a main event of an FS1 card, people were saying, yeah, that was a pretty good fight. But people were going crazy for this fight. They were going crazy live, and I was at a Buffalo Wild Wings. They were going nuts at the Buffalo Wild Wings. And I'll tell you something, that does not happen in Demetrius Johnson fights.
You know? No.
Yeah. This was, the excitement for this fight was purely about the stakes, you know, and the stakes were due to the title and the long reign of Demetrius Johnson. So I think, you know, for those that say the titles don't mean anything, I disagree. And I think this kind of is a statement in favor of that. But I do think, you know, you could have gone either way with it. The way Demetrius Johnson handled those takedowns and the scrambling in this fight was unbelievable. And just watching these two kind of go after each other and counter everything that the other one was doing. I'm looking forward to the rematch. I think that's going to be the first order of business is to get an immediate rematch. I don't know who else you give a flyweight title shot to at this point anyway. The division is pretty well sorted out at this point, unless you were going to give it to Joe Benavidez, who, you know, obviously has been second banana to Demetrius Johnson for several years now. But it's still, you know, an elite flyweight, and that's a short list of elite flyweights. What do you think is going to happen next with the title?
Yeah, I think that they should go right into the rematch. It's so funny when Cejudo said, "I'm going to go up a division. You know, Mighty Mouse didn't do it; I'll do it." And everybody's like, "Nobody wants to see that right now." Like, you just barely beat the champion in the split decision. You know, it's like you got to run that back. He's defended his title 11 times.
Yeah.
You know, if anyone deserves an immediate rematch, it's Mighty Mouse. I mean, he is at one point. I know you don't think he's pound for pound, according to the last show, at least. But
I do not.
Yeah, a lot of people do. I don't either, because you know, if to be pound for pound, you have had to fought like other kinds of people besides just like rematch after rematch after rematch. You know, and so
or just elite, a lot of elite guys in your division, which just doesn't exist at flyweight.
No, and so I think they should run it back, and if Cejudo can beat him a second time, and then Cejudo's stock would be raised, and that'd be something that I'd be interested in doing. But You know, yeah, just the path is clear. Part two. And part two is going to, again, get a lot of money. I think this will be the most profitable flyweight fight. And that's good for Cejudo. That's good for Mighty Mouse. But at this point, man, Mighty Mouse, I hope he's kind of in some ways kicking himself a little bit. He's like, man, I should have been a little bit more available for that TJ fight.
Yeah, he should be kicking himself. I was watching these fights with my brother, and we said before the fight started, you know, I put out on Twitter that I felt like something crazy was about to happen. I don't know if I was making it up or not, but when we were talking, we said, you know, it's times like this where you got to think that DJ has got to be regretting not going up to 135, because that was a money fight against TJ Dillashaw. Right? Yeah. You know, it's not a huge money fight because it's, you know, two guys that aren't necessarily the stature of a you know, top draw in the sport, but you know, champion versus champion is always going to cause some buzz anyway. And Demetrius Johnson usually is at the co-main event part of the card. And, you know, this has got to be, you know, in a way, it ends up working to his favor if you're talking about financial-wise, because he's going to end up making more money on a rematch than he would, you know, fighting another 125 contender. But you have to think that he's got some... He's got some second thoughts about how he handled the going up in weight portion of things.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Sala Monster sounds off.
Mundo goes to leave, and Taya says, "Wait, aren't you going to put any pants on?" He just goes, "No time for pants," and he walks off. That also happens to be Randy Orton's philosophy in life. My philosophy, too. You see, you don't know if I'm wearing pants right now or not, do you? You can't see. I could be wearing nothing right now for all you know. No time for pants.
The Monster sounds off. Since 2007, The Sala Monster sounds off. Available at thesalamonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Yeah, and he was I think he's earning pay-per-view points at this state in his career. I don't know if he's getting 500,000 flat or anything like that, but the pay-per-view points for a TJ Dillashaw fight would have been great, and this it probably been the most money he's ever made in his career for one single fight. And as good as the Cejudo rematch is gonna go, he's coming in as the challenger. And in his second title reign, he's not going to defend it 12 more times, you know.
Right,
it's this
right.
This is kind of just to regain his glory, but at this point too, it's kind of the end of an era for him. And he handled it really well when he lost. He was very gracious. And you know, you're talking about the scrambles, and from what I understand, he think he broke his foot during one of those scrambles and popped something. So it was all very interesting. And I was debating whether I was going to even mention this. You know, you said you were watching at Buffalo Wild Wings, and I almost myself even decided to watch this with my friends at a Buffalo Wild Wings, because me and Rob have this ranking system for me. Is this a order at home pay-per-view or go to Buffalo Wild Wings pay-per-view? And like, you know, for the pay-per-view that in Australia when they had Yael Romero against Luke Rockhold, that was a Buffalo Wild Wings pay-per-view. Yep. And this one was getting, and you know, next month's pay-per-view is most likely a Buffalo Wild Wings pay-per-view. Yeah. And this one was getting kind of there, but it wasn't because we were hoping that history would happen when we got it. So we kind of got what we paid for. But what I was debating on mentioning was this is how I knew it was going to be a good fight. We were the fight with JJ. It wasn't very good, in my opinion, and we might mention it later. We had a couple beers, and that was when we were eating our food and drinking. And then by the time the Mighty Mouse fight was happening, after round one, I was like, "Give me water! I need to remember this. This will be great." And so that's how you know it was a good fight. When a flyweight fight, you're not pounding the beers at a Buffalo Wild Wings or hanging out with your friends. You're like, nobody talk. You know, just let's just drink water and let's focus on this fight because we're seeing a classic.
Yeah.
And so that, I think that for me is the testament of how good it was. And I'll rewatch it down the road, and I enjoyed it a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, that is a good measuring stick. And so moving down the card, the next fight down, we had Cub Swanson falling to Hanato, or no. What is it?
Yeah, I can't do it.
Moicano.
There you go.
Moicano. And in pretty decisive fashion. And Cub Swanson, I think I talked about it last week, is not a guy who loses just to anybody. You know, he's lost to the top of the division, and that's pretty much all he's lost to. What did you make of this fight, and what are your thoughts on Moicano's prospects from here?
I think that it was a good fight. I think that I've never seen a jab that fast take right. someone down so quickly. I think part of it was the camera angle. Like, I'm the only one in who was watching in a group of three who actually even saw it. Like, yeah. people were like, why is he on the ground? You know, yeah. it's just like, it was just like this quick jab, and they showed the replay of it, and it was beautiful. And I think it just, I don't know if it's because how Cub was just switching stances or something, but it just...
Yeah, the camera angle on the knockdown was behind Cub Swanson, so you only saw his head snap back and then he fell. So that was pretty much that. You know, yeah. it's hard to catch.
It was a beautiful punch regardless, and then he got yeah. choked out. And I felt so bad for you know, he looked so disappointed when he lost Cub yeah. Swanson, understandably so. But then Moicano, how he kind of like started doing the prank, you know, like. Kissing his feet, sort of like, you know, thank you, no, you're it was just like Cub,
it was very awkward.
So awkward, and Cub clearly just wanted to be anywhere on earth but right there in that moment. Like, he didn't even stay for the result announcement. He was gone.
Yeah.
Moicano was by himself raising his hand. It's clear he was upset and he wanted to just get the heck out of there. And for that to be it was almost as awkward going back to the Luke Rockhold getting kissed on the cheek by Yoel Romero after he got knocked out. Like, it's kind of up there. It's in the top 10 yeah. of, like, these post-fight where the victor tries to make the loser feel better. And it's just – I can't wait to watch the Thrill, Agony, the Pain, Defeat videos UFC does and show Cub after that just being like, what was that?
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think that I don't know where Moicano goes after this necessarily. I think that he's in a pretty – tough division, but you know, maybe Jose Aldo would be a good pairing for him because Frankie Edgar's tied up, and we'll talk about that later. And Jeremy Stephens coming from a loss, and Jeremy Stephens might be nicely paired up with Cub Swanson. But yeah, I think that a you know, something like that might work out quite nicely. Even Josh Emmett, you know, because he was yeah. kind of a beast up until a certain knocked out moment from Jeremy Stephens. So there's a lot of options for him.
Yeah, I think the tough thing for Moicano is like he almost has no choice other than to go down in ranking. I mean, you've got I think I talked about last week having the winner of this fight Jose Aldo. So I think that fight does make sense for Moicano to fight Aldo, or he could fight Chad Mendez. I think it's another one that makes sense. But really, if he fights anyone else, you know, you're talking about either guys that are in the top 10 or top 10 caliber, but don't have the name recognition, guys like Volkanovski and Mirsad Bektic, or you're talking about, you know, Frankie Edgar, who's tied up with the Korean Zombie. You've got other guys who are tied up. So like you said, you know, the options are a little bit limited for him. For Swanson, it's a little bit different. I don't know what he's contemplating as far as his future. I think he fought Jeremy Stephens already. But you know, that's a fight that's no one's gonna argue against that, and you know, there's plenty of guys to fight at featherweight, up and comers, and things like that. If he wants to hang around, or you know, he's 34, he's been in some murderous fights, so you know, if he's contemplating you know, moving on at this point, then good for him. But I guess we'll kind of see what time will tell for Cub Swanson. Any other thoughts on featherweight or on this fight?
I kind of take back my Jose Aldo prediction, because I think Jose Aldo should stay loose in case Brian Ortega needs a dance partner, because everybody else is kind of tied up, and who knows what's going on with Max Holloway. So I really like your idea of a Chad Mendez. I think that's a really good fight, and that would be something to be excited about. Yeah, this is just a, you know, this is another ocean full of sharks, and so
yeah.
it's too bad for Cub Swanson, but I really thought that mustache would give him the power to win this fight, because that was yeah. incredible.
The dad mustache was quite a you thought it would be quite a powerful talisman coming into the fight.
Yeah,
it didn't quite work out that way, unfortunately.
Didn't quite work out, you know. And it's funny, because a lot of these guys who I have a soft spot for, like him and Jeremy Stephens, just aren't doing too well in these first round fights.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
I would like you said, to see him and Jeremy Stephens fight each other, and that would be kind of like a old school fan fight right there. And it could be just not even a featured fight, like third down. And that would be good. I just don't know where Cub Swanson goes from here, as far as like, it's not like if his contract comes up, he's going to be this hot Bellator prospect.
Right.
You know, he's just got to win one and lose one nowadays, it seems.
Yeah. All right. Well, moving on down the card. To me, that's pretty much the headlines coming out of this one. You know, you had Pollyanna Viana losing that fight that she was, to me, it seemed like she was set up to win. Didn't quite work out for her that way. Other than that, there's not a lot of headlines coming off of this one. Did you have any other takeaways from this card?
No. I mean, there was some interesting stuff in the prelims, but I honestly, like, as far as prelims go, I agreed with Todd Martin where this is some of the most uninteresting combinations that I've ever seen. I didn't even bother watching the Fight Pass ones. I just saw the results online and what I did see from the preliminary card. I mean, the Brett Jones-Pedro Munhoz fight was good up until the third round. Like, if that fight would have ended in the second round, that would have been contender for fight of the night. But then the third round with the – that had to hold the record for the guillotine attempts. You know, it's just, like, ridiculous. It's like, what are you doing? But, the women's strawweight fight, the JJ versus Pollyanna, that was bad. I blame that for the alcohol consumption, because that was like we were watching that, and by the end of the second round, you just saw the visceral hatred from the fans. You know, it's tough for the division in and of itself, because women's strawweight and, you know, the lighter women's divisions, they're still making their, you know, with Joanna not being the champion, Rose, those guys are marketable, but they're still trying to earn the respect from a lot of these kind of like douchier, hardcore MMA fans who don't think they should be on these shows. And you just saw the worst of the worst commenting during that fight. So going like, see, I told you. And I'm like, no, it's just one. There was a lot of boring guy fights on this card, too, I'd like to say. You know, so it's not just the division. It was just a bad fight.
Yep. Yeah, I'm with you on that. Really, the only things that kind of stood out in the rest of the card to me was Alex Perez taking out Jose Torres, which was on the Fight Pass prelims. And yeah, that's pretty much it. I mean, Pedro Munhoz continues to beat everybody outside the top 10 and lose to the guys inside the top 10. And, yeah, that's pretty much it. Kevin Holland looks like he's going to be fun to watch if he can get something that's not 2 weeks' notice against a murderer like Thiago Santos. We'll see how he does. But that's pretty much it for UFC 227. So the day before, I'm gonna go back and redo that, because I think that would be a good time for an ad. So maybe I won't just lead quite into it like that. So let's see what we said here. So that's about it for UFC 227. Now, the day before UFC 227, they had the UFC 25th anniversary conference, press conference, and announced or reiterated a bunch of fights. So let's go through those kind of one by one here. I think there was seven or eight of them. And or I'm going to read through them, and you give me your highlights and your takeaways from these ones, and then we'll save the big headlines for last.
Sure, like they did.
Yeah, exactly. We had Don Cerrone and Mike Perry, Derek Brunson and Israel Adesanya. Oh,
so real fast. Do you want me to stop you as you say them, or do you want to go through them all real fast?
I'll just run through them real quick, and then you give me what you got.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, you're fine. You're fine. So Cerrone, Perry, Brunson, Adesanya. Alex Smith and Volkan Ozdemir, Jimmy Manuwa and Glover Teixeira, Nico Montano and Valerina Shevchenko. And my one thing for you, did you remember that Nico Montano was actually the flyweight champion?
Yeah, it's funny when she went out there. I was like, who's that?
I had the same thought. And then they put the name up there and I was like, Nico Montano, that sounds familiar. Why does that sound familiar? Yeah, I did not remember until later on. And then the last three, we're going to save those last three, the three headline lightweight fights. But what did you think of those, any big thoughts coming out of those announcements?
So the first one you said was Mike Perry and Don Cerrone, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's a fight I've been calling on this podcast for like months and months. Yeah, and it's a no-brainer, but it proves that, you know, they are actually listening to us.
Obviously.
And so... Yeah, clearly. I mean, I think I don't want to misquote Robert, but he said that's going to be appealing to a certain fan base, that it's almost kind of like the leaning right sort of demographic, where it's like you got like both parts of kind of like that area that are represented. You got kind of like cowboy, you know, Cowboy Cerrone, and then you got Mike Perry, who's kind of the Florida sort of guy.
Florida
Mike
man.
Perry, exactly. Florida man. Mike Perry looks like all those memes. It's a Florida man does this, and it could be a picture of Mike Perry. So I think that's perfect. And it's during the anniversary show, right? It's like where the first UFC took place. And so it's kind of like they're going to be there. it's a real callback to a different era almost. It looks like a, yeah, it just looks very interesting. And I was watching the press conference with my girlfriend. She's like, man, Mike Perry either got incredibly ripped recently or he just put on a lot of weight, but he wasn't as tall as Cowboy, but man, he just looked thick. He was this huge guy. And what'd you think of it?
I think it's an easy fight to make. You know, it's going to be one that people are going to tune in for, you know, so it's a good fight. Good one.
Who do you think wins?
Probably Perry.
Really?
I got Cowboy
on that one.
I do think that, here's the wild card. I think Cerrone hasn't looked good a lot recently, but if he fights the way he can fight or has been able to fight before, the blueprint is clearly out there in how you beat Mike Perry. So if he does that, then yeah, I think he wins. But if he goes there and just throws down, then he's going to be in some trouble.
Wrestling fans, if you're looking for a unique and entertaining way to get your wrestling podcast fix, check out Ring Rust Radio. Ring Rust Radio uses its trademark brand of banter to cover all professional wrestling you love, including WWE, NXT, New Japan, Lucha Underground, ROH, Impact Wrestling, and more. We also hold sit-down interviews with some of the biggest names in the history of the business, such as Stone Cold Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, Chris Jericho, Kurt Angle, Trish Stratus, AJ Styles, and Roman Reigns. For those of you who want their wrestling with a perfect mix of serious analysis and comic relief, find Ring Rust Radio dropping every Wednesday night on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, Stitcher, and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's going to be a really fun fight to market. What was the Jimmy Manoa, right? He was fighting, and I get excited anytime I see Jimmy Manoa in the cage. So I think that'll be pretty good. And what were some of the ones that stood out to you besides the three we're saving?
One of the big ones I liked was Alex Smith and Volkan Ozdemir. I think that's a really intriguing fight. Two guys that are, you know, younger, at least in our eyes, than they probably are in real life. And you know, kind of inching their way towards the top of the light heavyweight division. I don't think Daniel Cormier is going to be around very much longer as champion. And these are two guys. You know, I wish that Ozdemir Gustafsson fight had gone off, but this is probably the next best thing, quite honestly, at light heavyweight. So two guys nearing the big names at the top of the division, and who have looked real dangerous. You know, obviously Ozdemir lost that fight to DC, but I don't think that's anything that anyone's going to hold against him. Going forward, you know, especially with DC probably inching his way out by the end of next year. And then, those are the two really that stood out to me. And then Nico Montano, I think she comes off as I think Shevchenko's like a 5-1 favorite at this point, or she's like a 5-1 favorite. That fight's going to be a massacre.
Yeah, I hope so too. I think she just seemed like kind of like bewildered, you know, in the whole whole situation of it all. And Valentina just comes off as such a badass, you know. Yes. And so I think it's just going to work out nicely. I thought one of the best exchanges was honestly between Gaethje and James Vick. I mean, Vick just I love Gaethje, but James Vick was right. You know, Gaethje has become the human punching bag, and you know, Gaethje, I don't even think he's 30 yet, like he said, and he's already, you know, he's all punchy, which I think it's kind of like a taboo to even mention in this industry, but he's totally right. I thought it was also interesting that Tyrone Woodley, Darren Till, the height differential. Like, it's just, oh my God.
Very pronounced. What's your thoughts on that fight real quick? I know we've got a few weeks before we're going to break that one down, but what's your initial thoughts on it?
I agreed with what you said in the solo podcast you did, that I would pay not to see Tyrone Woodley versus Colby Covington.
Yes.
Like, we mentioned that on the podcast a couple times in the past too, where it's like, yeah, marketing wise, this is going to be great. For the actual fight though, this fight's going to suck, you know, cause Tyrone Woodley, like, no offense to all the big Tyrone Woodley fans, but recently he has not had the most exciting fights. Like you mentioned, Sean, he made, his fight recently with Wonder Boy was, you know, made me almost cry. It was so bad. I was just thinking about all the money I just wasted. So it's good they got him against Darren Till, but honestly, Darren Till didn't have the most exciting fight with Wonder Boy either. So I'm still concerned. I don't care who wins. I hope Darren Till wins, but I care more about me being entertained than just, you know, the other aspects of the fight. Yeah. And that actually has Nico and Valentina on the same pay-per-view, which also could be either a massacre or a really boring fight. We just don't know because no one remembers the Nico Montoya fight and no one cares about her. So
yeah,
there's that.
Yeah. So let's move on to that those lightweight fights. We had Justin Gaethje and James Vick, as you mentioned, and then Dustin Poirier and Nate Diaz, and which I want to talk about the timing of that one too. And then we have the champion, which I always forget that he's the actual undisputed champion, Khabib Nurmagomedov against Conor McGregor, the former thrice stripped champion, or maybe just twice. I don't know how many times at this point. But the beltless Conor McGregor, or at least right. the valid beltless Conor McGregor at this point. So let's talk about lightweight here. You've got Gaethje and Vick, which is a popcorn fight. Nothing wrong with that. Who do you have in that one, by the way?
Sadly, I got James Vick. I want Gaethje to win. But
I think Gaethje's going to eat his lunch. I just don't think James Vick is that good.
So.
I think he's going to murder him.
If Gaethje doesn't murder him, this is going to be bad for Gaethje.
Yeah,
he's going to be relegated down. It's going to be, this is kind of like Dana White's like, this is your last chance.
Yeah.
Defend your freaking body. You know, like don't take all these kicks and just do something because this will be bad for Gaethje. It'll be, we all want James Vick to lose. I can only think James Vick direct family is the ones who wants him to win. Like, so hopefully we get that.
Yeah. So let's talk about Poirier Diaz first. Does the fight make sense? And then they slated it for November 3rd in Madison Square Garden, which is the month after McGregor and Nurmagomedov. What are your thoughts on the timing and the matchmaking?
I think that I like the fight. I'm surprised Nate Diaz took it. When I heard that Dustin Poirier would be the one that Nate Diaz was fighting, I was kind of shocked. Were you surprised to actually hear the opponent?
Yeah, I was.
I mean, yeah. It's like, I know that Nate Diaz revealed that he's been in this major lawsuit and that he hasn't been available to fight, but part of me also thinks that if they would have been like, hey, GSP wants to fight you November 3rd, he'd have been like, okay, yeah, I'll do it. Last year.
Yeah, exactly.
So for him to take an opponent who is well-known in our world, but who literally just got off a fight and won pretty decisively once it got going, is a huge risk for Nate Diaz. And I just, if, you know, I know he just fired his manager, but he should get a new one, and the new one should be like, what are you doing? You know? like you've got all these people who'd be willing to fight you who are these big-name guys. I mean, Nate Diaz could walk into a title shot, depending on the division, just because they want, you know, to make that star fight. And for him to take Poirier is such a risk. But I would like to honestly see this being considered elevated to the main event without an interim title being in the mix, because obviously it doesn't need one because their division is titles being defended the month before. But I think Nate Diaz, you know, Dana White should kind of slap Nate Diaz on the wrist a little bit and say, hey, you think you're this big drawing card, you want all this money, show us. You know, like,
yeah, give him pay-per-view points, put him at the top of the card.
Yeah, and if it doesn't do well, then you're not that big without Conor. So there's that. And so I think that it's all looking good for Dustin Poirier, though. This is going to be his title fight. You know, this is bigger than him fighting.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this is huge. And I'm excited about the fight. Who do you think wins this one?
I think Poirier wins it. I do. I think he's just going to be able to not get sucked into a Nate Diaz fight. And even if he does, there's not a lot of guys that I would say can handle a Diaz style fight, but Poirier is one of them.
Yeah. I think that he's got the discipline for it for sure.
Yeah, and then really, just a real quick aside on this: the November 3rd card right now for MSG is looking just exquisite. I mean, you've got the Adesanya and Brunson fight that we talked about earlier. You've got Luke Rockhold, Chris Weidman. You've got Ronaldo Souza. You know, you got Jacare against David Branch, and Paulo Costa against Yoel Romero, which just the chef's kiss, you know, on that one. That I get a little chills just thinking about it. It's going to be beautiful. And I mean, Paulo Costa is a murderous person, and he's undefeated, and he's just been destroying people. And then Yoel Romero is, you know, I mean, you know, Yoel Romero, he's just a crazy man who knocks people out in the third round, and just it's going to be wonderful. So that's an exciting card. But let's talk about now. Here's the thing that perplexed me with that fight, though. You know, like we talked about the matchup was surprising, obviously, for Poirier Diaz. I figured that they would put Poirier in there with Tony Ferguson and then put it on the same card as Nurmi and McGregor, right? Because, I mean, how many times have we seen people pull out of the lightweight title fight in the last 2 years?
Yeah.
It's or interim title fight. It's been every single fight almost. So now we're setting it up again to where we're not going to have, you know, I mean, I guess you can always move a guy from November to October if they choose to do that. You know, say if one of them pulls out, they pull Poirier out of that fight and move him to October. But why not just have him slated to fight on the same night so that they're peaking at the same time, they're ready to go, you know, on that night in case they need to be elevated into the main event. The caveat to that would be if they've already got Tony Ferguson on the back burner and they've got him and they say, just make sure you're ready in case one of these guys pulls out. But it would seem to make sense to me if you just have them fighting on the same card. But I guess, you know, I'm not a promoter. So what do you think about that?
So rumor has it, and I will not reveal my source, that is the plan with Ferguson.
Yeah.
That Tony Ferguson is going to get his show money. He's going to get paid to go in a full camp. And he's going to be there to be on standby for Khabib and Conor. That is kind of what the talk on the street is, at least, is that so they don't. I think that to put Dustin Poirier and Nate Diaz on the same card might be a little bit of a security risk. Just like UFC probably doesn't want to deal with Nate Diaz being backstage. Nate Diaz being backstage when the other two foes of his. I mean, it's a. I know they do a lot in front of the cameras to do like a little show and stuff, but I think everybody will be on their best behavior for the most part, but they might not be. Yeah. And I'm sure the UFC can contain these guys, but there's enough to worry about with the Khabib camp and the Conor camp. Then when you want to introduce the Diaz bros working out in the back too,
right.
It's just kind of some combustible elements. And I think that Khabib Conor is such a big fight that you would almost be wasting the Nate Diaz Dustin Poirier fight on that card because.
Yeah,
I think they're
going to
they're going to promote the Conor Khabib as almost like a big time boxing fight, kind of like the money fight with Floyd and Conor, where it's like it really doesn't matter what they put on under this fight, and they're already talking about. You know, I already was reading some articles how they're like, how much will this beat the record for pay per view buys and for the UFC, and I think it will. And nobody even cares what the co-main event is. The co-main event literally could be anything, and people would still buy it. So just put Dustin Poirier and Nate Diaz on the other card, you know, and make sure Ferguson stays away from all these different cords on the ground and doesn't trip over a chair and have, and just have Ferguson ready to replace someone, but also physically in shape to fight the winners of these two bouts. I mean, it's sad because you felt bad for Ferguson and he missed out on some big money fights, but he's really looking like the one who will benefit from all this in about half a year.
Yeah, you're not wrong. Who do you think wins this fight between Nurmagomedov and McGregor?
I don't know. You know,
the correct reaction right there.
it's tough to say because I've bet against Conor so many times, and who would have thought he would have knocked out Jose Aldo like he did, or handled Eddie Alvarez the way he did. The only time he really got shown up is with in MMA, at least, was with Nate Diaz. And I think there was a definite difference in body types at the time.
And it was short notice.
It was short notice. And hopefully at this point, too, Conor's worked on his cardio because, that was so embarrassing for him in such a big worldwide stage to gas out like that. That's the one thing that but if he can keep Khabib standing, we saw Khabib.
His stand-up is awful. It's just bad.
Awful. And if he can keep that feet on the fight on the feet, man, he's going to destroy Khabib. I think people aren't giving him enough credit in that area. You know, if he can just stay on his feet, this will look pretty good for him.
Yeah.
What about you? Who do you think wins that?
You know, it's my initial reaction is Khabib, just because he's been able to get every fight to the ground. But I mean, it is not shocking at all to me if McGregor goes in there and ices him. You know, in very little time. Just because, you know, Khabib is not a big finisher. He's not a guy who goes in there and gets guys out. You know, he tells them to quit, but he's not a guy who goes in there and forces stoppages. You know, he goes in there and he will grind you into a fine powder, but that's going to be tough to do against McGregor. You know, the prevailing thought probably for those who think he's going to win is that he needs one takedown per round. And that may not be wrong, but he's still got to get that takedown. It's a really interesting fight. I mean, this is about as old school as you can get at an elite level. You know, you've got your guy who obviously wants to be on the feet in McGregor, and your guy who obviously wants to be on the ground in Nurmagomedov, and whoever gets what they want is probably going to win this fight. So
yeah,
it's a really, really interesting fight. I think I do probably favor Khabib, but not by a whole lot at this point. But to me, you know, I am glad this fight is happening. I think it is the more intriguing option, if the most intriguing option between Ferguson Nurmi and Ferguson McGregor and McGregor Nurmi. I think this is probably the most intriguing fight. The thing, the one that I'm most interested to see what happens, you know, just because of that dynamic that they have. You know, I would probably favor McGregor over Ferguson, but not by a lot. And Ferguson and Nurmagomedov is probably the other fight that is very intriguing to me, because Ferguson is so good everywhere, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I thought that Ferguson, I favor Ferguson over Connor, and I thought that
I don't think that's crazy either. I think that's perfectly reasonable.
Yeah, I think that fight will be interesting if it has to be the replacement fight. I really hope that the rumors are true and that Ferguson is getting ready, because Khabib has been known to drop out of fights. No, you know, worries. And so
yes.
So for us to be putting all our eggs in that Khabib basket, is even when he won the interim or whatever title it was originally, and then they said, no, this is the real title now. I'm right. Like, okay. This guy's fought like twice in 5 years, yeah. It feels like. But, it'll be really good to see, and I think it was one of the most, like, it's funny because people knew this was coming, and Dana's like, no, he told John Morgan at the beginning. He's like, it's not happening. We're talking about it. And then for him to reveal it, it's like, you know, it's everybody was just excited to see it, and I can't wait till the promo poster for this comes out. They better come up with something cool. Like, I can't wait for everything to come out with this, the trailers, and, you know, this is just going to be, it was kind of cool too when this is announced. I don't know about you, but I got even more excited about the pay-per-view, the TJ Garbrandt pay-per-view. I was like, oh, you know, UFC is cool again for the mainstream crowd. I'm going to watch this, and I think it's just going to make things more relevant up until it happens. And I'm excited about it.
Yeah, I agree. And I hope there's something on the lower card too that can catch people's imagination too.
Support what we do here at the PW Torch Livecast when you shop Amazon. Simply go to pwtorch.com/Amazon. We've simplified the page. There's a big Amazon logo. You click on it, it takes you right to Amazon's homepage. But because of that small detour, we get credit for your visit, and we get a commission on anything you buy on that shopping trip. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. Thank you very much for your support.
But, okay, so moving on, let's see.
What's Connor's buddy's name who got insulted by
Artem Khabib?
Yeah, put that guy on.
That would not be a shock if he was on there.
No, have him fight Zabit or something like that. Like, have him fight... Doesn't Khabib's brother fought for the PFL? Like, just bring Khabib's brother over, and that would be great. Just have, you know, have something like that. Like, I don't know what sexy fights are available, but bring him over. I think I'm going to say it now. I have no inclination that this will happen, but I think Derek Lewis will find himself on that card somehow.
That would certainly be okay.
Yeah.
Let's take a peek at this card real quick and just see what's announced so far. That's pretty much it. Sergio Pettis and Jose da Silva. That's pretty much it. So Jose Formiga. That's pretty much all that we've got so far. So there's probably a lot more coming, I would say, in relatively short order. Because this fight is only in 2 months. So, you know, surely they've got some contract negotiations already underway here so guys can get in their camp. This feels like an old-school Pride event if it goes on much longer. I mean, they would wait till a couple weeks out before they would announce a lot of the fights for Pride. But
if you were Dana White, you know, Sean is now Dana White, what would you make the main event of the New York card? Would you risk doing Poirier Nate Diaz as a 5-round non-title fight? Or, like, you just saw all the fights announced, all the fights that would just happen. You know, we don't have a heavyweight fight available. Light heavyweight's probably not available. I mean, what do you do?
I think of the options that are currently announced for that card, I think Poirier Diaz would have to be the main event.
Yeah, like, really. Someone asked Dana about it. He's like, "We're working on some stuff." He said,
"Yeah, I'm sure they want to get a title fight on that. They don't go to MSG with nothing in mind, you know."
Yeah, I just don't know what they could do. Honestly, I think the nice thing, not that it's even for these cards, but we're talking about Ferguson as a possible replacement. I did hear DC say that he would consider, obviously, Stipe getting a rematch if Brock Lesnar didn't pass all the tests and stuff. And I like the fact that UFC is being more aware of that they need to have replacements ready to go so we're not scrambling. Yeah, because even they had, what's his name, the really tall heavyweight, when DC was going to fight Stipe, they had a...
Stefan Struve?
What's his name? No, they had the guy as tall as Stefan Struve. he weighed in too. It was funny. It was like this third heavyweight weighed in. Everybody's like, Volkov? What's it? Vulcan?
I know who you're talking about. I can't remember his name. There is a V in there.
Yeah, yeah. So I like that they're doing that, and they know what's riding on this fight. And it's just like, that's good for them to keep doing that. Nate Diaz is kind of a wild card to put in the main event too, because right after the press conference, he seemed furious for some reason. Like, and I think partly rumor has it, again, I'm the guy spinning fake news, is that Nate was told originally that he was going to be on that pay-per-view with Connor.
Ah, so he wanted to be on the card with Connor.
Right, because who's not already has a schedule fight doesn't want to be on that card.
Yeah.
Like, it's going to be massive, you know? Do you think it's going to be the biggest ordered pay-per-view of UFC history?
I think it's got a shot. I mean, I don't know. My only hesitation at this point is how much cachet has the UFC lost over the past couple of years to where when they say, hey, this is a great big fight, this is Conor McGregor, how closely are people going to be listening that they even know about it, you know? But yeah, I mean, if they can get everybody's attention, yeah, it's definitely got a shot at it for sure. And that, oh, by the way, that was Alexander Volkov.
Yeah. You might know him from nothing.
Well, not knocking out Fabricio Verdum, I guess early this year. That would be something you know him from, but not much else other than that. And that's, you know, here's the thing.
I don't know if anybody watched that, Sean.
Well, I was just going to say, that's the problem. Like, if you look at this last press conference, right, where they announced all these fights, to me, that was an indictment on the UFC, because usually when they have these press conferences and they announce all these fights, that's a big buzzworthy thing. And really, all they had for this one was the McGregor fight and the Diaz fight. And that was what they were banking on to really come up with all the buzz here. But you've got guys that, you know, that Smith and Ozdemir fight is a super exciting matchup, you know, and Gaethje Vick even is a decently exciting matchup. But you don't have, you know, there's no co-headline on that press conference. I mean, usually those things are stacked, you know, floor to ceiling. But then, you know, Derek Brunson and Israel Adesanya did not need to be part of that press conference.
I know.
You know, it's a fine fight. There's nothing wrong with it. You know, Jimmy Manuel and Glover Teixeira, that didn't need to be part of that press conference. You know, this to me is an indictment on their ability to have created new stars. You know, there's nobody that people are looking forward to fight. I mean, that you haven't been seeing for the past several years. You know, we don't have these new guys that people are like, oh, I got to see this guy. You know, I mean, and there's something to the fact that Max Holloway isn't available. And, you know, had he been able to fight last month against Brian Ortega, maybe the winner of that fight would have had their next matchup announced or something like that. Yeah, there's something to that. But they've got nothing. They've got nothing, you know, and there was no featherweight fights on that press conference when featherweight is stacked. You know, that's a stacked division. But they had nothing they could announce. I mean, you had Frank Yeager and Korean Zombie. I don't know if they talked about that there, but they weren't at the press conference. But, you know, it's unfortunate, you know, that they've got such a huge roster and the inability or unwillingness to promote individual fighters and individual fights above just being a content producer, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, which, that even bleeds into WWE's discussion as well. But anyway, I keep cutting you off. Go ahead.
No, I almost cut you off because you mentioned the Frankie Edgar Korean Zombie thing. Man, I forgot that was even announced, but I was so excited when I found out. I was like, oh,
yeah,
that's a really good fight.
It is.
I was like, but no one really cares. And I just like, I think that I'm going to beat up Glover a little bit. I love Glover. I think he's got a good personality. He's a fun fighter to watch when he was in his prime. But it's just like him coming up there and being like part of a specialty main event.
Right.
Who is he fighting again? Sorry.
Manoa.
Manoa, that's right.
Yeah.
He's going to get destroyed.
Yes.
Like, everybody just kind of felt bad for him. We're like, we just saw him.
Yeah.
Like, very recently have a really lackluster performance, and now he's going to fight Jimmy Manoa?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, seriously.
Like, yeah, that's going to be bad, you know?
Yeah.
And it's just like, yeah, that's one of our big fights we got coming up. And for, like, Mike Perry to be kind of elevated into a main event and just going to be propped up there is kind of a joke to a certain extent. I think that people... I mean, he won his last fight, but before that, he was on a 2-fight losing streak where he looked pretty bad.
Yeah.
And, you know, UFC just kind of, he's more of a character than an actual fighter.
Right.
And,
yeah. Well, you could say the same thing about Cowboy at this point, too.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. And so it's like, yeah, a lot of these fights, there's just not a lot of buzz through them. And a lot of your key players are just not available or not there. They got so many champions who are either tied up or there's stuff's going on that, it's just, if they didn't have the Conor thing to announce, that would have been such a lame duck. And even the venue, I have to say, I almost got tickets there because I'm in L.A. Mm-hmm. And I saw, but they were selling tickets for the post-fight and the weigh-ins.
Get out of here.
That's, again, fake news possibly. But, you know, it was on a ticket stub website because you have to, like, acquire the tickets.
Oh, right, yeah.
But people were... even kind of being weird about that. So I just didn't want to put the effort into doing the research. But the venue looked good when you saw the audience, but the stage itself wasn't kind of the formula sort of black and black tables and curtains. And it looked interesting, but at the same time, too, it kind of looked rinky-dink.
Yeah.
You know, it kind of looked like Bellator and PFL were doing a joint promotional show, and here's our fighters. It was just not... You didn't see seem like UFC caliber for some reason. I don't know.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So that's pretty much it for MMA right now. Let's move into the world of pro wrestling. Now, I brought up last week, I haven't been following a whole lot recently. I do love what NXT has been doing, and I'm hearing good things about the G1 Climax tournament. But what are your thoughts on what's going on with the SummerSlam build-up, the inevitable Roman Reigns title win at SummerSlam against the deplorable Brock Lesnar, who everybody hates now because he just doesn't watch Monday Night Raw. So apparently, I would also be a heel in WWE. But what's your take on the build-up, and what are you excited for, and what are they doing right and wrong for that?
Well, you know, they want me to be clutching my pearls when I hear that Brock Lesnar doesn't watch Raw either. But
why would I watch the show, Paul?
Yeah. No, he's not one of us. But honestly, like, a lot of time when I don't have time to watch Raw, I'll watch the occasional YouTube highlights.
Yeah.
Like, just I don't want to ruin my schedule by leaking this out. But WWE releases a lot of good stuff on YouTube that makes watching Raw live almost like completely unnecessary.
That's why I watch the highlights on Hulu sometimes.
Yeah, even and then YouTube, they even cut it down to a more finite, like, this is what you need to see. As far as the hype goes and everything, I had to look up yesterday when the pay-per-view is even happening.
Yeah.
So I just like, it's just, I'll be excited to see Brock in his possibly last WWE match for a while. It'll be interesting to see that. I'm not looking forward to the, like you said, the christening of Roman Reigns. And it's just more, it's just, you
the
know, re-christening, about,
the re-christening of Roman Reigns.
It's just like, I don't care, you know, and it's just so much stuff going on with it. You know, Daniel Bryan, whatever his, Bryan Danielson, whatever is going on with his career, you know, it's, that's once that gets cleared up, you know, I'll get excited about his matches in WWE. But it feels like kind of like WWE wants SummerSlam to be happening 2 months from now, not
right now. Like SmackDown would be something that I would be more likely to watch just because the specter of Roman Reigns doesn't hang over it. But it feels like it's in a holding pattern to me. Am I off in that?
No, well, no, absolutely. Because they have no baby faces. They're like, we got like three guys, you know. I think Wade Keller was pointing this out on one of the podcasts last week. He was like, man, if like two other guys get injured right now, you got nobody, you know? And so I think that right now everybody's just kind of waiting to see the contract status of Bryan Danielson and then just working their way from there. And I mean, AJ, he's doing okay. Shinsuke, you got Orton trying to be a heel, and it's all just kind of boilerplate stuff. And I'm sure SummerSlam will be good, but I'm more excited about, like you said, with NXT, what's going on over there.
Oh, yeah.
And it's not just like this hardcore, like, you know, hate everything fan of mine. Like, I like watching really bad wrestling. I like watching really good wrestling, but I just don't, I'm not enjoying it. It almost feels kind of like a cult-like experience for the WWE.
Yeah.
It
feels like that's what they want it to be.
Right.
You know, which is annoying more than anything
else. It's
like
a political party. You know,
yeah.
It's like, you know, you could be a liberal or you could be a Democrat, Republican, or a WWE universe person in the sense where we got the way we talk. We got the way we do things. We believe in these things. If you don't watch the show, you're not with us. You know, it's just like at a certain point, too, it's I got the network. I'll watch WWE SummerSlam. I don't watch the full pay-per-views anymore either. I skip over so many. Yeah. It's just so bad.
Yeah.
It's just so frustrating. And I try to watch the New Japan when it's on Access TV. And I, like you said, G1's supposed to be good. But thank God for being a VIP member, shameless plug, because otherwise I would be completely lost in the world of wrestling right now. Just hearing their Wade Keller break it down and everything just helps out so much. Because he makes something that sometimes week to week can be very uninteresting, very interesting. And Todd Martin, you know, in his opinion, and Bruce Mitchell, these guys are just kind of like keeping it alive for a lot of us because I couldn't believe nowadays I'm not excited about a pay-per-view that when I was younger or even in the early 2000s, I couldn't wait for.
Yeah, SummerSlam is the big one, man. It's one of the big ones. You would think it'd be a bigger deal. But
and Ronda Rousey, I don't even know really. I mean, I know her and she's going for the title and everything, but I've kind of lost interest in that to a certain extent. I know she's having a match this Monday on Raw today.
Yeah,
for those of you listening, you've already seen it. But I'll record it probably, but I don't really – nothing really right now is kind of getting me interested. I'm kind of glad that the UFC is ramping some things up, so my interest will go there and just stay towards the NXT. What do you think about – SummerSlam?
I don't know, man. I mean, I can't lie that, you know, I love Samoa Joe and I like AJ Styles a lot. So that match is definitely intriguing to me, even though we've seen it before several times. But, you know, I do like the idea of that match. And I think they'll go out and make it something good if they're allowed to. I love what Seth Rollins is doing. Other than that, I'm pretty lukewarm on stuff. The thing is, you've got all these guys that were on NXT and were awesome when they were there. And, you know, we know what these guys are capable of. And it feels like everyone is either underused or used incorrectly. And it's just so frustrating to watch the product when you know what these guys are capable of if you just let them do what they're good at and cast them in the right roles. And it's just – but they won't do it. You know?
Right.
So anyway, that's the – I think that'll wrap up our wrestling discussion, unless you have anything else to add for that.
No, I just no.
Very good, very good. All right, so to wrap things up here, Rick, do you have anything to plug this week?
Well, I just want to say that I just getting back in town. I'll eventually start writing the MMA Nerd columns again, and you know, looking forward to getting back into regular routine with the podcast. But I'd like to say that thank you, Sean, for last week's solo show and in the spirit of a weight killer daily hotline sort of thing. That was really good. And we're looking forward to hearing from Zach and Robert at some point in the near future. But you'll be hearing from us on a more frequent basis. Apologies for the break, but that's just how things happen sometimes. But I'd also like to say Zach Hadorn's new podcast, The Art of Wrestling.
Yeah, I think is it The Artistry or is that his column? I know I've heard the show and it's good.
Listen to Zach Hadorn. It's really good. He did one about Roman Reigns recently that I listened to, and I think that his podcasts are great. And thanks to Wade Keller for just keeping the ship steered, and Robert, to be continued, my friend. And and listen to Sean's podcast as well, if you want to give that one a plug, my friend.
Oh, yes, thank you. So, that's my main thing to plug here. You can follow me on Twitter at Sean Ennis, S-H-A-W-N-E-N-N-I-S. Rick, what's your Twitter handle?
don't have a Twitter.
Oh, well then, don't worry about it then. How did I not know that? I think I did, but I just forgot. Anyway.
Well, yeah. That's, on the canvas was Zach Haydorn.
Yes, on the canvas.
The art,
I knew it was canvas.
What, yeah, and then on this one, he just did breaking down the art of Brock Lesnar. On the canvas was Zach Haydorn.
Yes.
Listen to it.
And you can check out my other podcast that is not related to any combat sport of any kind, real or simulated, and that is Stories of Yore and Yours, where I have a weekly short story reading, adding sound effects and music. It's fun stuff to do. That is, again, Stories of Yore and Yours. You can follow it on Twitter or Instagram. Instagram is what I recommend at this point because that's where I've been focusing most of the energy. And that's at SYY Podcast. This week we've got two short stories coming up that I think you'll really enjoy. Last week we did a Sherlock Holmes story, which was a lot of fun. So check that stuff out. So for Rick Monsi.
One last plug.
Yes.
I want to give a shout out real fast to someone who we don't give a lot of shout outs on the show is Cole Henry, MMA contributor. He does all the live reports.
Oh yes.
And he's great. Like yeah, Cole Henry, really, if you're hearing this, my friend, we actually really appreciate your work on the website, and you give round by round results of these live shows, and kind of the things he wrote in the last two fights in the pay-per-view were really great, and he just broke down those two fights really well, and I just shout out to him. He's the silent typing partner of our team right here, and I just, everybody check out MMAtorch.com and look at his live reports as the pay-per-view is going on. If you miss anything or if you want a second opinion or hear someone's live reaction, he's one of the best at it.
Yes,
so anyways,
that's it. No, I will second that. That's a great plug. And that is something that I have done before. The round by round, blow by blow coverage, that is not easy, my friends. So check that out. Cole Henry does a great job of it. So for Rick Monsi, I am Sean Ennis. Thank you for tuning in, and we hope to see you next week.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, this show can be ad-free and commercial-free with a VIP membership. VIP members not only enjoy all 7 episodes of the PW Torch Livecast with no commercials and the ads and plugs edited out, but they also get ad-free additions to the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling post shows and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast. Also, part of a VIP membership and exclusive shows such as the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline, the 3 times a week Bruce Mitchell audio show, including a new weekly mailbag edition with Bruce, The Fix with Todd Martin that I also host, post-pay-per-view roundtables that I host, and other shows on specific topics, including the new Talking Honor podcast with Lola and Harley discussing the latest in ROH, including a review of the latest TV show. And now we are proud to announce that Alan Cunahan, known as Alan4L, has brought his talents to PW Torch after many years at The Observer, and there's a lot of excitement about his new weekly show called Alan4L's Pro Wrest Paradise, with the best coverage of New Japan, all of Japan, the UK indie scene, including the US indie scene. So be sure to become a PW Torch VIP member for as little as $8.25 a month on average, and have multiple new VIP exclusive and ad-free podcasts every day on customizable feeds on your iPhone and Android device. For more information and our sign-up form, go to pwtorch.com/govip. And you'll find out what else comes with VIP membership, including a weekly newsletter, over 1,500 back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter that started it all, ad-free access to our mobile and desktop sites, and more. Full lineup, full details, and the sign-up form at pwtorch.com/govip. Life.